You're hearing the sound of beautiful Mother Ocean. I'm here atop Memory Island on Arfaro Beach, otherwise known as Madeline's Beach, here on Aotea, Great Barrier Island, New Zealand, my true home in the Southern Hemisphere. This is On the Brink Radio, broadcast number 268, coming at you here from the 9th of March. Beautiful interlude in the much-needed rain with this beautiful warm sun beating down now. I'm in kind of a compressed time frame. I'm leaving the island tomorrow and then going back to Australia on Monday. But this show is going to be about a recap of one of my most amazing visits to New Zealand. But also, I'd like for you now to listen to my brand new piece of music that I recorded with music wizard Ian McAllister in Christchurch a couple of weeks ago. No one's ever heard this before except for a couple of friends. It's me playing my Native American flute and guitar with some brilliant music wizardry by Ian and I doing the engineering and post-production. Later on in the show, you'll hear a 17-minute piece that's got didge, flute, and all kinds of whale sounds and production and stuff. So this show will be probably about 40 minutes of talking and 20 minutes of music.
Thank you.
Yeah, I've spent more time in New Zealand in the past few months than in a few years. Came back from Australia in August and went directly here to Great Barrier. Was here for a few weeks. Did my first large-size mural that I ever did on the island. Then I went down to Gisborne in the Hawke's Bay and East Cape area for the first time, which was really fantastic. Went down and saw my friend Susan Thrasher at Paraparaumu. Very cool there. Then I went down to the South Island and went to Christchurch. And then I went to Rarotonga for a month, which was amazing. Really, really special place. Came back to Christchurch in the middle of December, spent Christmas there, got to visit Castle Hill, Grandmother Moratini, got to visit Karamea for the first time, which was really cool. Met a legendary truck driver friend named Ray Miller up there. Spent a lot of time in Christchurch. Then I went up to Golden Bay. Spent several weeks up there. Had an absolutely amazing time, very close to the ocean. Got a lot of artwork done, met a lot of really, really nice people, stayed in a variety of different situations and stuff. Then I left there 2 weeks ago, went up to Napier to see my friends Margaret and Michael. She's a really cool intercity bus driver who I met last year. Stayed with her, with them for a few days, and they took us to Lake Waikaremoana, which was a very legendary trip, such a very, very magical, special place. I've heard about it for 19 years, but was only able to go there for the very first time then. But I really felt like it was another dimension. Very, very beautiful. It's an alpine lake, probably of glacial origin, at about 700 meters, but very remote, very, very quiet. And that whole area has not been tainted by any use of 1080 poison, so that water is probably some of the cleanest lake water in all of New Zealand. Then, about a week ago, I came back to Aotea here, and have just been wrapping up a lot of artwork, some much overdue orders of rocks, and going and visiting some of my most beautiful places here. Like yesterday, I went and visited Grandmother Pahutukawa, who I've interviewed on my radio show several times. I think we'll hear a little bit from her. She has a message for us. And visited Totoko Okahokura, the rock similar to Memory Island further down the beach where Arafaro spread his cape in honor of the seven Tohora, the seven right whales who guided him, as the story goes, all the way across the Pacific Ocean to this very bay, probably well over 1,000 years ago. And I visited the overlook at Windy Canyon and the Okiwi. I call it a nematon, which is a druid name for a sacred grove of trees. The Okiwi Kakariki nematon. I heard so many Kakarikis there. They're a little parrot similar to a Rosella in Australia, but a little smaller, but with a very sort of different ratchety chirping sound. Never heard so many of them going on for so long and up so close. It was really, really, really amazing. You'll hear some of those sounds here too. So now I'm atop Memory Island, whose Māori name I've still not yet been able to ascertain. One of my most powerful spots here, Lisbon and I used to come up here all the time, watch the sunrise, the sunset. I've recorded many shows from sitting on this exact spot where I am right now. This has been an amazing week here, but I have not seen or experienced two of my very favorite fellow beings here. I haven't seen any dolphins on this visit. And I haven't seen any Aniwaniwas or rainbows, although at Lake Waikaremoana there's an Aniwaniwa waterfall, which is really, really amazing. So I'm really noticing that Great Barrier Island, as beautiful and special and undisrupted of a place as it is under attack from activities and processes that are assailing landscapes and life forms everywhere that civilization rears its head. But here, the main problems I see that I've commented on many, many times are, to me, the thing I notice the most is the noise from the planes. And these are all decades-old single and twin-engine planes that sound like chainsaws in the sky. And I learned from my friend Charles Kuiper, an inner city bus driver who I met, who used to be a pilot in Kenya and a scuba diver. He knows a lot about all the scientific and engineering aspects of noise, underwater, and aviation acoustics and stuff like that. And he said, it's no easy matter to change the propeller on these planes because the propeller is like an integral part of the whole motor. So that kind of threw a wrench into my idea of having the propellers replaced with these things called scimitars that are much more efficient and low noise. But it's not impossible. But the main thing they'd have to do is buy new planes. And you're talking $2 or $3 million for a new plane. So they would have to be flying flights 24 hours a day, nonstop, with fully loaded passengers in order to pay that off. I don't know. I don't see any. It seems like what they could do that no one else seems to be able to do is to invoke the C word, conservation. Conservation means just doing less of stuff. But no one can make money on that. We don't maybe need new forms of electricity. We just need to use less and more efficiently what we do have. Same with plane flight, same with hydrocarbons, same with all this stuff. If we used everything more efficiently and did without a lot of it, or any, and just only what was necessary, that would solve a lot of the problems right there. But no, nobody can capitalize on conservation. Also, the island of Rakitu here has been nuked with bradyficum, a iodine-based poison here, and I'm not sure if they did a second drop or not, but that's quite disturbing considering the amount that went directly into the Fongapo estuary and up the Okiwi River. It's really cool. I was able to do interviews with Clyde Graff and Fiona McQueen, both top 1080 educators here, and I'm lined up to do a third interview with Carol Sawyer, who is another 1080 activist and educator. There's also the issue of the noise from lawnmowers and weed eaters and power tools and stuff like that here. It's the kind of stuff, if you're in an urban neighborhood, of course you're going to hear it. But because the background noise level here is so quiet, that when there's not any sort of individual motor going off, it's very quiet. You can actually hear the birds, you can hear the ocean and the wind and stuff, and there's no background noise from distant highways or airports or giant, you know, factories or anything like that. That you have the background noise in a city is so high that a lot of the stuff just doesn't stand out like a sore thumb as it does here. But in contrast to the beautiful, truly, if involuntary, low noise reserve at Rainbow Valley Community there near Takaka, sometimes Medellin's Beach here seems loud compared to there. But it's just, it's really an incomparable environment. But I really am a fan of the whole concept of no-mow lawns and using sort of lower-powered tools like my friend John Garlick uses, electrical things that get the job done. They may not be at the industrial level, but they're much, much quieter, and they don't impose noise on people who may not be deaf that are outdoors several houses or half a kilometer away. I also noticed this time, everywhere I went in New Zealand, that everything's just clotted with too many people. All the buses I rode on, everywhere you go, it's just like maxed out. And I've traveled at this is the peak season of the year, late summer, but I've traveled at this time of year before, and I've never seen it quite this bad. And as much as I've talked about the problem with the Chinese invasion happening, this is not exclusively Chinese people. They tend to just have they'll have like their whole own bus full of them. You know, I'm talking about, you know, just a mix of everybody. But there is a big thing going on that's becoming increasingly blatant. It's the Chinese water grab going on in New Zealand. They'll buy up any kind of property that has associated water rights so they can then start sucking out billions of liters of the water and bottle it and shipping it back to China. This is happening in several locations now on both islands of New Zealand, and this is just what I'm aware of. Very, very, very dangerous scenario. And the whales and dolphins are under no less attack now than ever. I was very sad to have not noticed for a couple of days that last week, quite a few dozen or two dolphins stranded both in Marlborough Sound and on Stewart Island again, and kind of a repeat the multi-location stranding that happened back in November, that I wrote a very detailed blog post about, attributing it to covert anthropogenic activity with the shift, the Pacific pivot, and all of Uncle Sam's naval activity shifting to down under, the less visible and less controlled environmentally waters of Australia, New Zealand, the whole Trans-Tasman area, New Zealand's EEZ, the Great Barrier Reef. These are, for any kind of submarine and oceanic warfare activities, these areas would be optimum because they're in the territory of very close allies of America, very unpopulated and low visibility. And Totoko Kahakura, I visited there at sunset yesterday. That is just such a powerful place. And this beach right below me, where I've had my most powerful encounters with dolphins ever, and the greatest number of these encounters, too. You can hear the cicadas up here. I'd really like to thank everybody for helping me do what I do. People who buy my art, give me places to stay, give me rides, give me money, talk about what I do in favorable ways to people who might care. I've met a lot of really nice people in the past few weeks. And I just really think that we should all do our best to ask more of ourselves. That was my favorite quote from George Carlin, the comedian. Ask more of yourself. I'd really like to thank Jewel Stanley at UCY-TV for her unending dedication to investigative journalism, hosting On the Brink Radio and many, many other really cool shows. Don't really have too much more to say right now in words. I'll let my music. I did a really cool interview with a brilliant flute player named Peter Phippen. That'll probably be the On the Brink show for next week, if not the week after that. And I'm hoping to catch up in Sydney with a guy named Mark Anderson, who has created this thing called the Nature Sound Map. That's a really interesting. It's got over 60 locations. When you click on the world map, it plays bioacoustic samples from those places. So he's based in Sydney. I'm going to go to the Central Coast, work on getting a new computer with my friend in Sydney, then go down to Melbourne and possibly visit Wilson's Prom again with my friend Jenny and the William Ricketts Sanctuary, who I'm helping Paul Bennett, the director, make a film about there. Then visit Tasmania, Three Hummock Island, in the spirit of my lately deceased spiritual brother, Rob Alliston. And then go to the Flinders Ranges and hopefully catch up with Uncle Ron Coulthard of the Adnamanta people. Then to Adelaide and Semaphore, and hopefully see Wambi and go down to the Second Valley Songline, up to the Alice Springs, where I'm supposed to do some more murals there. Then up to Darwin in mid-May, to the top end, when the weather will just be getting really, really, really beautiful. And then in the middle of May, in the middle of June, my visa will be up, and I'll have the option to extend and possibly travel down through Western Australia, come back to New Zealand, go back to Rarotonga, or possibly go to New Caledonia for the first time, but I need to polish up on my French. Or possibly back to Hawaii, this time not only to the Big Island to try to do some lava and astronomical photography, but also to visit Maui and Kauai for the first time. And I'm hoping to do another interview with my friend Terry, Mr. Limpet Lily, the brilliant underwater photographer. He's had some amazing adventures lately, like when he got zapped by a military sonar a few weeks ago and got it all on his video camera, showing the turtles trying to hide from it. Anyway, this is Jeff Phillips Wefferson signing off for On the Brink Radio. Stay tuned for some really cool music. Thank you, Mita Kaye Yasin, and all my friends and family, all the children of the Star Maker. Let's all try to live simply so that others may simply live.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.